Good morning.
Good morning.
Respect for the independent web of all existence of which we are a part is something we say at least once a week. And we say we covenant to promote and affirm that belief. But how do we know that we are a part of something? How do you know you are a part of a particular family? How do you know you're a part of a group? How do you know you're a part of a community, of a nation, of a region, of a relationship? How do you know that you are a part of anything? How do you know that your arm is a part of your body, your fingers, your thumbs, your toes? How do you know? I think it's more than just knowledge. It's heartfelt. It's touch. It's feelings. It's emotions. When somebody in our family says, "Guess what? I'm engaged," we celebrate and we're happy. When somebody in our family says, "Guess what? The engagement's broken," we're usually sad, but we could be happy. We don't know. Could be any number of things. But we have a relationship to that which we are a part of, and we are conscious to that which we are a part of. And it's a cognitive understanding, it's a heartfelt understanding, and it's awareness that we, as we move and we live and we breathe, we are in relationship with others who do the same. And it is the same with the inherent web of existence. For us to fully claim that we are a part of existence and the inherent web of existence, we need to feel it, we need to know it, we need to touch it. There's a book out called The Last Child in the Woods. It's a very scary book because it talks about our children no longer being part of nature, no longer being part of the environment. 5 years ago, I was listening to a theologian from South Africa. And I really didn't know, it was probably 10 years ago, when I was in graduate school, and I really didn't know what he was saying. What he was saying was that our earth is being wrapped, there's a belt being wrapped around our earth, a belt of technology. And this belt of technology is disconnected from the earth. And we are now living in that belt of technology separated from the earth. And I think that's what this author is trying to get at in this book, The Last Child in the Woods, is that we are no longer connected to the earth. And I think that's odd, because how can we no longer be connected to the earth when I am indeed part of the earth? If that's so, then I must have a belief somewhere inside of me, or at least live like I am not part of the earth. And how can that be possible? To believe that I am not an integral part of the earth, that I am not one with the earth, one with the web of existence. I think the key word here that kind of pivots how we understand our relationship to this web of existence is indeed existence. What is? That we are part of what is, as opposed to creation. That we were created and the earth was created? Or are we part of what exists and it just exists? How are we to understand the difference between the two? Because often there is intense discussion between the two, existence and creation. I'll give you, I think, is some of the fruit of creation, of an example. If we, the foundation of who we are as a people comes from a sense of creation. Recently, about 5 years ago, there were three gray whales that were identified as being stuck in the ice. And up north, and an Eskimo discovered these, and the Eskimo came back to the village, and he says, "Hey, guess what? These three gray whales, they're stuck in the ice." And the news got to the government, got to the Russian government, got to the United States government, got to the media, and all of a sudden, the government's pouring in its resources, the media's there, and it's a three-week piece of news. And before you know it, $5 million are spent on freeing these three gray whales. At the same time, 200 whales were slaughtered for commercial venture. How many thousands of people died of AIDS in Africa? We can't tell the difference between the dramatic and the essential. There's something going on that we have a belief system that emphasizes and brings light to the dramatic, but fails to notice what is essential. What is essential is what is. What is dramatic, I think, is birthed out of a creation understanding of who we are and what we are. Why do we even need a seventh principle? Why do we even need a declaration that we are a part of the inherent web of existence? Why do we even need that? Of course we are. There's this one shaman in South America. He says that if we have faith, we are alienated from the earth. That if we are one, we don't need to have faith. And I'm struggling to understand that. And what I understand about faith is that I have faith in something. And that I need to have faith in something for my completeness, for my wholeness, for my well-being. The presupposition is that without faith, I'm not okay. That there's something wrong with me. That I'm lacking in who I am and what I am. So I need to have faith in something other than myself to be okay with who I am in the here and now. That's from a creation foundation, not an existence foundation. Because in an existence foundation, who I am and what I am is simply what is. Simply what is. Somehow, when we live a myth that moves us away from simply what is, we become alienated. And to have faith is an attempt to reconcile that alienation. Alienation has been put together, thoughts about alienation have been put together over the centuries, and some people talk about it like this. Alienation is a deep down estrangement that is a feeling of being separate from the self and other people and the earth. It is a word that is used across disciplines. St. Augustine, a 4th century theologian, said that alienation is due to our sinful nature and we are being out of favor with God. Sigmund Freud, the founder of psychoanalysis, says that estrangement occurs when conscious and unconscious, their minds are split apart. Emile Durkheim, a French sociologist, he talks about the inner rootlessness that comes from a loss of societal and religious tradition. John Paul Sartre, the existentialist philosopher, said that we are ultimately alienated because we are powerless to alter the destiny of our death. Theologian Paul Tillich says that it is all of these things. Theologian Paul Tillich says that when all of these things come together, we end up objectifying ourselves. And he created a term, and his term was called thingification. That we become things among things, and that we begin to objectify ourselves in this place of alienation, we begin to separate ourselves from what is. We begin to separate ourselves from the inherent web of existence of which we are a part, and then we have to make meaning of that alienation as if it's normal. One of the meanings that is made because of when alienation is normal and we are alienated and we feel odd and we don't feel good within ourselves is that the theologian says it is because of our sinful nature. It is because there's something wrong with us. And I am going to say that indeed when we are in that position of discomfort, of dis-ease, of alienated from our natural self, there is something wrong. It is not us that's wrong. It is that we know something is wrong. We are alienated. And our tendency is to blame ourselves that there is something wrong with us. We become like children, and children are narcissistic in nature. And when something goes wrong in their environment, they blame it on themselves. Children of 10, children of 8, when their parents divorce, say, "What did I do?" that I do this that caused a divorce. Children naturally blame themselves. And when there's something wrong with us as humans, as adult humans, we begin to blame ourselves. What is wrong with us? Because if I acknowledge what is wrong in the larger world, I am overwhelmed. If I acknowledge that I'm in a community, and if I acknowledge that I'm in a political environment that knows when it makes decisions, global warming is the outcome, that it knows when it makes decisions, all the fresh water in the United States is contained with mercury, and we get warnings, don't eat the fish because of the mercury in them. When we know we make decisions based on a legislative act called the Clear Skies Act, indeed what it does is it muddies up and dirties the air more. When we know we are in an environment that these things are true, if we were not to blame ourselves and we were to look out, we would indeed be overwhelmed because it's much bigger than us. So if I stay depressed and I blame myself, I can handle it a bit easier. I don't have to get as upset, nor do I have to take the responsibility to begin to change it when by myself I cannot take the responsibility to begin to change it because I'm not big enough to do so. These people that talked about alienation, they give some ways to kind of bridge that alienated place. St. Augustine again, he said we need to be reconciled with God. Sigmund Freud said we need to become aware of our unconscious selves. Self-awareness. Durkheim, the sociologist, says we need to reestablish community. We need to reestablish tradition. Those of us that are committed to this fellowship, we know how difficult it is to establish community. We know how difficult it is to establish tradition. John Part Sartre says, we can make ethical choices even in the face of death while we are alive. Paul Tillich, the theologian, says that above all, what we do is we need to make time for the spirit. And here's where it gets kind of confusing, especially in our day and age, because when we hear people talk of the spirit of the earth, we kind of marginalize those people. We want to put those people on the fringe. But if we are part of the earth and we are part of existence, indeed our spirit is the spirit of existence. We are part of that. But then when we hear people talking about the spirit of the earth, we want to marginalize them. But when we marginalize that conversation about the spirit, we marginalize ourselves. And Paul Tillich goes on, and he says we need to examine ourselves, build our communities, and we need to create our own meaning. We need to create our own meaning. We don't like to create our own meaning. And I know that because we are too easily given over to take in as meaning of our lives and as meaning of our culture, meaning created by somebody else. We allow others to make meaning for us. We allow others to make meaning for us. Why? Why? We know all we have to do in this culture is create a television network and pound it through the air, through the media, and over years, the people that listen to that media will have the wrong understanding of reality. But then we ask, who's reality? Who creates reality? Well, if we are part of the inherent web of existence, that is reality. The air we breathe, the water we drink, how we relate to one another, how I understand myself, the maturity and the capacity to make meaning for myself, these are reality. But then we have sociologists talk about there are realities in competition. There are realities in tension with one another. Well, how can that be? How can there be more than one reality? when we exist and we are bombarded with a way of life that is indeed suicidal, and if we saw an individual who was creating an environment that was toxic for that individual and knew that that was toxic for them, what they were doing, we would call them suicidal. Many of us, if it was an addiction process, we might try to intervene. We might try to do something. We might try to call the person's attention to that to create a change. But then if it's too much energy, we just let it go and we use the term tough love and they float away and it was their fault they floated away because we did the best we could. So we have a tough love attitude. We say the person is a living suicide. But yet, we actually support legislation that does the same thing, that puts our nation on a course of suicide, that puts this earth on a course of suicide. We pollute our water, we pollute our air, we chop down the trees, we know that the rainforest has a relationship with the coral reefs, so we eliminate the rainforest, we wonder why the coral reefs are dying, we don't know the purpose of the coral reefs for all of creation and what that might mean, but we know there's such a diversity in the coral reefs, it just lights up our eyes when we go to visit. Now when we go to visit some of the coral reefs, that life and that color is being diminished. We participate in a culture that is suicidal. And I believe that we are so numbed inside, we don't fight that path with all that we are, with all the energy that we have. We don't fight over and against being on that path to suicide. Because we don't fully believe in the maturity, or we don't fully put ourselves in a spiritual process that moves us to a maturity that can say no. When we look at the seven principles, and when I started introducing the seven principles, we talked about it, the seven principles as a process to maturity. When we get to the seventh principle, we are talking about that is the mature position. We've talked about a strong inner life, the dignity of ourselves. We've talked about how to create social justice for the community at large. We talked about how to nurture one another in a sense of spiritual growth. When we get to the seventh principle, we talk about how to make decisions for a nation, for our culture, that owns honestly who we are as part of the inherent web of existence. It is a mature position. And yet when we find ourselves to dealing with issues of that maturity, we find ourselves in a culture that's acting very immature. So I go back to, how can that happen? How can we take what is and do damage to it when we are the what is? It's because somehow we have shifted the understanding of life from what is to a narrative of some type of creation that we have created. And I would read a bit from Eric Hoffer, a couple things about mass movements. Unless a man or a woman has talents to make something of themselves, freedom is an irksome burden. Of what avail is freedom to choose if the self is to be ineffectual? So, we join a mass movement to escape individual responsibility, or in the words of the ardent young Nazi, to be free from freedom. Passionate hatred can give meaning and purpose to an empty life. Thus people haunted by the purposelessness of their lives try to find a new content, not only to be dedicating themselves to as a holy cause, but also by nursing a fanatical grievance. A mass movement offers them unlimited opportunities to do both. When our spirits are so beaten down, when we are empty, when we feel like what we see is harmful and we have to deny it because we know it is harmful, so we move into a state of denial, we begin to look over here and allow others to make meaning for us. And when others begin to make meaning for us, we are very vulnerable to become part of a mass movement. So much so that today we are part of a mass movement that is beginning to control this culture. Not only control this culture, but beginning to move in a direction because of the power of this culture to be able to control larger than the boundaries of this nation. It is a mass movement that says things like this. We do not need to attend to the well-being of this earth, because when this earth is ended, there will be a new earth, and we will no longer shed any tears. These people are part of a mass movement that begins to feed on itself, because our own sense of maturity and our own sense of esteem is so low, we allow others to make meaning for us. Eric Hoffer calls it the substitute sense of the mass movement. We diminish ourselves and we empty ourselves, and we bring a substitute way of life in, a substitute sense of self in, and we begin to live as if that is indeed ourselves. Our culture is in a mass movement that believes that 59% of the people in our culture believe in the prophecies of the book of Revelation, in which they say one day all the Christians will be removed from the earth, and the Christians that are left will experience 3 years of peace, and after that 3 years of peace, all hell will break loose, and 3 years after that, Jesus will come back and set up a 1,000-year reign of a kingdom, and at the end of that time, there'll be the great judgment day, where the great dragon will be loosed and get some more people to take to hell, to with the other people that are already taken to hell, then set up kingdom of heaven forever, and then there'll be a hell of people burning in hell forever. Some sense of unconditional love from an unconditional loving God. I have not quite figured out how that works. But nonetheless, 59% of the people of that culture think this is reality. Think that this is part of the web of creation. Half of the people in our legislative process use these people and believe something like these people to stay in power, which then it begins to feed on itself. So now we have an ideology and we have a theocracy, that these are the foundational beliefs. These people have no concern for what is. These people have no concern for this environment. We are the what is. We are this environment. However we look at the seven principles as guiding principles, as sacred, as a good set of rules, as a good set of principles that produce rules, however we look at that as we covenant to affirm and promote those, these values are marginalized, even though we believe they speak to maturity of what it means to be human. They are marginalized. They are put aside so that this created myth can take over and have power in a mass movement in which we stand by and think, it simply can't be true. We don't want to believe it's true. We don't want to believe what is true is true. We don't energize ourselves to our fullest capacity to stand in the way of a wave of ideology and a way of legislation and a way of being as a human being that's on a road to suicide, destroying the environment as it goes. And yet our principles call us to stand there in maturity and to say no to this. We become the ones on the street corners saying the earth is about to end. We become the crazy ones saying the earth is about to end, except we have no clean water to drink. The ozone layer is being depleted. No children are being raised with playing in the woods. Camping's ending. We go camping and we see our children walking around the campsite looking in the Game Boys. It's just true. It's just true. And now there is a mental illness called the deprivation of nature in our children. We are in trouble as a people. we are in trouble as a culture. Existence, what is, we are in denial of what it is, and it is ourselves. And our culture, and who has power in our culture, moves in the direction of a reality that does not exist. But yet, legislation, values, come out of a conception of reality that's not real, that's more powerful than our understanding of what is real. The existence. Our existence. When we get to the seventh principle, it's time for us to make a decision as a community. Will we take these things that cause alienation and take a look at those things that cause alienation? The absence of community, the absence of tradition, the absence of deep intimacy. And will we confront those and build a community that promotes those ways, the ways that bring reconciliation to alienation, so that this can become a place that's out of the living principles? We need to make a decision. So be it.